These are just quotes for moms. Raising kids is a walk in a park, like Jurassic Park. Silence is golden unless you have kids, and then it's suspicious. If you are not yelling at your kids, you're not spending enough time with them. Nothing in the house is really lost until mom can't find it. You know you're a mom when you understand why Mama Bear's porridge was cold. And if your kids are giving you a headache, follow the directions on the aspirin bottle, especially the part where it says, keep away from children. And if at first you don't succeed, try to do it the way your mother told you. And then I have a couple of good ones, like heartwarming ones. A mother holds their children's hands for a short while, but their hearts forever. And motherhood is the beautiful inconvenience of being another person's everything. Isn't that lovely? Because that's what you are. So when Dan asked me to do this, in the last 2 months, I've been stuck in Moses. I've been stuck focusing on Moses and talking about Moses and thinking about Moses. He's kind of like one of my heroes of the Bible. And so when I started thinking about Mother's Day and giving a message to mothers, I read the passage again, and I saw things that I never saw before because I had a different set of glasses on. And what it did was it showed me there were five women in the passage connected to Moses that were so significant Moses wouldn't have lived without them, yet we pass right over it and don't even think about it. So when I read the passage again with the thought of how women are involved in history and how they're involved in changing a culture and a nation, all of a sudden their faces came on the map. So these five women are what I want to talk about today, because it's Mother's Day. It's interesting, out of these five women, only two of them have their actual names recorded in the passage, out of the five women. Yet they played such a significant key role in what went on and what happened. Now, isn't that kind of a description of motherhood? Nobody sees you at 2 a.m, like he said, when you're up at night with a sick child. Nobody sees you when you're fixing lunches and fixing breakfast and getting clothes and finding the shoe and getting school stuff together and all that kind of stuff. Nobody sees that. It's easily looked over. So all this stuff happens. So is it possible to be significant and not feel like it? We'll see. Because as mothers, we do make a difference. Now, these five ladies are going to be an example to all of us. That includes the men. This is not just a message for men, ladies. It's a message for men as well. These five women had characteristics. Each of them signified a characteristic that if we implant into our lives, then we will be significant to the point where it goes way beyond us. It affects other people's lives, and it will filter into other generations, because that's what we want. Because we've all been there, you know. We've all been challenged. We all wish that we were in a place that we could make life easier. Isn't that sometimes what you just want when you're busy and you're pressured by the world and you have all these demands? And it's like, could I just have one day to be easy? But it's not in the multiple choice section. These five women, we're going to discover the difficulty that they faced. The incredible difficulty and at the same time, the significance that they had over their everyday life inside the difficulty that they faced. You know, we have, let's catch up with the story. All right, we have Joseph that goes to Egypt. He's actually brought to Egypt as a slave. So this whole story starts off with slavery. So he's brought to Egypt as a slave. He works as a slave. And then he gets lied about. He's put in prison. Then Pharaoh has a dream. He interprets the dream. And then when he is put second in command. And he saves Egypt and the world, the known world, from starvation, from what they can do. So then they go from that, and Joseph being like the second in command of one of the greatest empires that existed, to where it says years later, Joseph dies, that Pharaoh dies, and it says another Pharaoh took his place that didn't know Joseph. Now, during this time, something incredible happened, and it's called the blessing of the Lord, but the Hebrew people multiplied. The Hebrew people excelled. The Hebrew people flourished to the point that it said there were so many Hebrews in the land, they covered the land, to where the Egyptians started fearing them. The Egyptians started being afraid because they're like, they're so numerous. They flourish so much that they are overwhelming us and our culture. So what are we going to do about this? So Pharaoh, that didn't know anything about Joseph, comes up with a plan. The plan was that let's kill the male babies. I mean, we think abortion's an issue in this country. What if every woman that got pregnant, that the medical staff was told that if you have a baby boy, we will kill it right then? We have no idea what they went through in their society if you were Hebrew. So this is where the first two ladies step up to the plate. These are, out of the five women we're going to talk about this morning, these are the only two women that are named by their names. It's Shifra and Pua, and they were the midwives. Pharaoh called them before them and specifically told them, this is what I want you to do. We're getting rid of all the males that are Hebrew because we're afraid of them. You think history has changed? The enemy hates men. Now back then, they killed them at birth in the physical, but today they are murdering your manhood through mental thought and suggestion. It's always been on the enemy's agenda to kill the men. Now they're promoted to, well, anyway, you get me. All right, so Pharaoh sends a decree. He calls the midwives before him, and this is what he says. Okay, now you're helping the Hebrew women give birth. Now when they're on the birth stool, this is what I want you to do. If they have a son, you kill it. I can't even imagine the type of culture that you would live in where that was okay and that you were on the receiving side of that. And I want to read to you, this is Exodus 1, verse 17. Now, this is their account. This is what we're going to learn from these two ladies. Verse 17, but the midwives feared God and did not do as the king of Egypt commanded them, but they let the boys live. So the king of Egypt called the midwives and said to them, "Why have you done this thing and let the boys live?" And the midwives said to Pharaoh, "Because the Hebrew women, they're not like Egyptian women, for they are vigorous and give birth before the midwife can even get to them." So verse 20, so God was good to the midwives, and the people multiplied and became very mighty. And because of the midwives, because they feared God, he established households for them. They feared God. The first characteristic that we can learn from these inconspicuous women that are not talked about in the history, they feared God. They feared God so much that they challenged the Pharaoh who was head over the entire nation. They feared God. They gave more respect to what God could do than what Pharaoh could do. Do you think that if Pharaoh could kill every male child in the Hebrew land, do you think he could not kill them too? They must have had the thought that our lives could be at stake, but they feared God. The fear of God is a mighty thing. The fear of God is not talked about in the church today. It's not talked about much in the world, but the fear of God is a commodity that anyone can have. And it will change your life, and it will change the lives of those around you. The fear of God, believe it or not, not only affects believers, but it affects unbelievers, even though they don't want it. But it affects us differently. It affects a believer. The fear of God affects a believer because it makes us stronger. It gives us boldness, and we're going to see in just a minute, it causes us to make right decisions. Some of us are contemplating decisions we wouldn't have to make if we had the fear of God. But to the unbeliever, how does the fear of God affect the unbeliever? All you got to do is look in the Bible. All through the Old Testament, what happened to the nations that would come against Israel? It said that the fear of God would come on them to where their hearts would melt like wax, and they feared the people. The fear of God is in this earth. It's us who carry the fear of God to where we can use it as a tool, and it causes unbelievers to fear God as well, but it has a different result on us compared to them. It brings blessing to us. I'm telling you, if we bring the fear of God back into the church, the fear of God will be back in the earth. Two women in a whole kingdom decided to change because of the fear of God. How much can we do as we stand together? And this is what was the result of them standing in the fear of God. Israel continued to multiply and grow and prosper. It didn't matter what Pharaoh tried to do, they even became more prosperous. The fear of God will bring prosperity. I'm not talking about finances, even though that could be a part of it. I'm talking about really living abundantly. Don't you want to live life abundantly? The fear of God is part of that. And also, it says, like in verse 20, he was with the midwives, and then he blessed them, he prospered them. In Psalm 34:7, it says, the angel of the Lord encamps around those that fear him and rescues them. Pharaoh didn't kill the midwives. God was fulfilling his word and honoring them. In Psalm 111, verse 10, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. A good understanding have all those who do his commandments. Because the world's going to tell us how to live. People's going to tell us how to live. Our job places are going to tell us how to live. Social media is going to tell us how to live. They're all going to tell us how to live. Only the fear of God will tell you the right way to live. So what do we want? What do we want? Do we want to go with the flow, or do we want to make a difference? We want to make a difference. So let's join them. Okay, let's get back to our story. That's the first two ladies. We got three to go. Okay, so, all right, so this happens. So the midwives, they continue to let the male children live. Hold on just a second. They continue to let the male children live. And Hebrews just keep prospering and multiplying, and they get greater in numbers. They get stronger. They get mightier. So Pharaoh has to take it up a notch. He puts out a second decree, and this one is not to the midwives. This one is to the entire land of Egypt. And this is in Exodus 1, verse 22. Then Pharaoh commanded all his people, every son who is born, throw them into the Nile. That is, every Egyptian has a law now that if a male baby is born in the Hebrew camp, they can throw it into the Nile. Can you imagine being pregnant, anticipating what could happen if it's a boy? You know, we think we live under pressure. Yes, we have pressure today that we've gotten accustomed to, and it's big for us. But these women were remarkable. And all they did was follow just a few simple things that we have already in us. So then Moses' mother comes on the scene. And in this passage, now there's another passage later on in Exodus where they're given a genealogy. That's the only place her name is mentioned. In this passage, the significant role she plays, and it doesn't even mention her name. It just says Moses' mother. Welcome to motherhood. So Moses' mother comes on the scene, and this is Exodus 2, verse 2. I'm going to read verse 2 through 4. It says, the woman conceived, and she bore a son. And listen to this. When she saw he was beautiful, she hid him for 3 months. There's a lot of strategy here. She hid him for 3 months. But when she could hide him no longer, she got him a wicker basket and covered it over with tar and pitch. Then she put the child into it and set it among the reeds by the bank of the Nile. And his sister stood at a distance to find out what would happen to him. The key word there is she saw. She saw he was beautiful. She saw. Does that mean she saw it was just a pretty baby? That word saw is about what happens in a mother when she sees her baby and her heart gets engaged. And an unconditional love happens. And there's something in a mom that sees something in a baby that the world doesn't see, but the mom sees it. And that never stops. There's something of promise. A mother sees promise. A mother sees potential. A mother sees everything that that child can be. And that's what happened when Moses' mother saw he was a beautiful child. She saw his potential. She saw his purpose. And she's like, we cannot let them rip this baby out of my arms and throw him into the Nile. So what she did is she activated something that every one of you have. She took what she saw and she used it in faith. Her contribution to our story today is faith. The first two women is fearing God. The second thing that you guys have that Moses' mother had is faith. And you know what faith will do? Faith will open up your sight. You want to see what the world doesn't see and the potential and the things that can happen? Step out in faith, and all of a sudden your vision will open up and you will see too. She was a woman of faith. Hebrews 11:1, we all know the verse. Now, faith is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen. When you use faith, you will see in the Spirit. You will see in your difficult situation, no matter who you are, everybody has a difficult situation in their life. And when you use your faith, when you activate your faith, all of a sudden, vision happens. Where there was a no way out before, vision happens. So how does that work? It says that faith without works is dead, but how do you get from faith to works? She shows us how. It's a four-step process. Faith. She had faith that that child should live. That child should not be killed. It should not be thrown in the river. I mean, when I think about someone that I love dying, it wouldn't be by drowning. It'd be torment to even imagine that. But she wanted him to live. So here's what faith did for her. She had to develop it. It said that she hid Moses for 3 months. Your faith, you can have faith, but it has to grow. It has to develop. So she took 3 months, which is showing us that there is a thing that you can see in the spirit realm, but you have to have time to build your faith to the point where you can get to that place where your faith becomes sight. So she hid that baby for 3 months. So you have faith, and then you step into vision. So in that process of stepping into vision, then what do you have when you get vision? Because your solution to your problem does not come within the problem. You can keep looking at your problem forever and ever and ever, and you're not going to find the solution in the problem. But you will find the solution in your sight. Because the solution doesn't come within the problem. It comes in the visionary stuff that you see of what can be. So you have faith. You have sight, and then that's where you get your strategy. Faith, vision, strategy. What was her strategy? The plan was birth. So for 3 months, she chews on it. She hides him. She develops her faith. She starts getting sight. She starts grabbing a hold of what that sight is. And then, ta-da, I'll take a basket, and I'll put tar and pitch in it. Maybe if the right person finds him, maybe he can live. Even if I don't get to raise him, at least he's alive. At least he's alive. At least he could live. Your faith will give you vision, and your vision will give you strategy. Strategy you didn't have when you were looking at the problem. And then the last step is action. Now that you have the strategy, it's up to you to act on it. She could have had the plan, but if she didn't go ahead and do it, it would have never happened. Moses would have been dead. Faith, vision, strategy, and action. Now, what I think is brilliant of what God does, the same Nile River Pharaoh used to kill the babies, Moses was let live. God used that same river that Pharaoh used to kill to save Moses and ultimately to save his nation and to bring the defeat of Egypt. The same river. One brought death, and what God did brought life. We can see things in our children that the world doesn't see. We can see things in each other that the world doesn't see. Activate our faith. Activate your faith. Start seeing, start developing. Start building that faith to see the impossible, to see what can be, not what is, not what your limits are, not what you've always been, what your family's been, what your boss told you, what your dad told you. What are the possibilities of what could be? And start in your vision for what could be. Get a strategy and start stepping out in it. Because what kind of, like when it talks about kids, what kind of faith does it take to send your kids out the door when you send them to school? Can you imagine Moses' mom putting him in that basket and setting him adrift and walking away? It took faith, but she had a plan. She could see it, she could see it, she could see it, and all she could do was act on it and trust God. All right, so now we have faith. So we come to the next one. This is Exodus 2, verse, we're going to do 5 and 6. The daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe at the Nile with her maidens alongside the Nile, and she saw the basket among the reeds and sent her maid. She brought it to her. She opened the basket. She saw the child, and behold, the boy was crying. She had compassion on him. And she looked up at her maidens and said, "This is one of the Hebrews' children." She had compassion on him. This weekend when we were at the Ark, yesterday, as he was teaching, he mentioned the word compassion and gave the Hebrew definition. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that's so good. The Hebrew word for compassion is a moving of the womb of Yahweh. A moving of the womb of Yahweh, compassion. The dictionary puts it a different way in our language, but compassion in the dictionary actually has two parts to compassion. The first part is this. It says deep sympathy or sorrow for another in misfortune. But the second part is about action. It says accompanied by a strong desire to alleviate that suffering. Compassion is not just passion by itself, where you feel hurt for someone else. You feel a passion for someone else. Compassion is something that you feel that, but then you're activated to do something about it. You step in. This is why people feed the hungry. This is why people go on the mission field. This is why people do things for other people. It's because they have compassion. They have a passion to help other people, but they want to do something about it. Pharaoh's daughter did that. She had compassion. Can you imagine a more unlikely candidate to adopt Moses? First, she was an Egyptian. They hated Hebrews. Hated them. Secondly, it was her father that put up the decree to kill every male child. Her father. She adopts this baby. He's going to be living in their house. The same guy that decreed death for all of them, Moses will be living in his house. Is that going to cost her? But she had compassion. Don't ever underestimate the power of compassion. It changes lives. She wasn't even a believer, but yet she had enough compassion to change the life of Moses, and ultimately it set things on a trajectory that we had the whole Israel people go into the promised land because she had compassion. You know, it may be that even your mother may not have been a believer. Maybe when you were a mother, maybe you weren't a believer at the time. But destiny can still happen. Destiny can still happen. So she gives us compassion. Now we're to the last one. And this is Exodus 2. We're going to go in verse 7. It says, then his sister, Moses' sister, again, she's unnamed, it just says sister. Then his sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, because, you know, she was waiting by the side of the Nile watching, remember? Shall I go and call a nurse for you from the Hebrew women that they may nurse the child for you? Pharaoh's daughter said to her, well, go ahead. And the girl went and called her mother. Pharaoh's daughter said to her, take this child, to the mother, take this child away and nurse him for me, and I will give you wages. So the woman took the child and nursed him. The child grew, and she brought him back to Pharaoh's daughter when he was weaned, and he became her son. Wow, talk about a heart-wrenching story. He became her son. And Pharaoh's daughter was the one that named him. She named him Moses because I drew him out of the water. That's what Moses meant. Now let's talk about Moses' sister. She was a young girl. We think that maybe there's a point that we can't have. We're not enough to be significant. And this is a young girl. This is his sister. That's just waiting by the side of the bank. And she does something in her youth that is so significant. It's pivotal to Moses being saved. She's watching as Pharaoh's daughter is there by the water. So she goes over and Pharaoh's daughter picks up the baby. Now, it says in the narrative that the word gives us, all Pharaoh's daughter said was, oh, this is a Hebrew baby. And then his sister steps up and says, hey, you want me to get a nurse for him? Bam. What that is the suggestion is planted. Why don't you raise him? Pharaoh's daughter didn't pick him up and say, I'm going to keep this baby. She just opened the basket and said, oh, this is a Hebrew baby. And she comes up and she says, you want me to get a nurse for you so that you can feed him? suggestion, keep him, raise him, put him in the palace, let him live so he doesn't have to die. She's thinking all this stuff and planning it, just the suggestion. Can you imagine the power that we have as the people of God to be able to suggest things to the world and to the people we know that could just slightly tilt their thinking to make them into somebody they never thought about being 10 minutes before that? And all she did was put herself in her mom's and brother's service. That's what we have in Moses' sister, is service. You know, we don't focus on service anymore. It's hard to find people in the church to serve because everybody's so busy. But she served. She wasn't out for herself. She wasn't out to make a name for herself. She wasn't afraid. Well, she may have been afraid, but she did it. She was out to save the baby. God is still out to save people. We could be Miriam. We could be the little girl that suggests, you know what? Wouldn't you like to know the Lord? We could do things that are pivotal in people's lives. You know, the thing about service is that people know when you do something for them, it really does speak louder than words. You know, people are up, it's not a big recognized position. You know, we don't make parades for us, you know, for the people that serve. People are up here all the time at the church. Nobody sees them, but they work hard. You know, they don't get applause. They don't get recognized, but they do it, and it changes lives. The cool thing about service, the power of serving other people, is that there's no age to it. You can never be too young. You can never be too old. You can never be too inexperienced. All of it has influence. We all want to influence people, don't we? Serve. You don't know how much your little thing that you do to serve someone else can influence a life, and you don't know what the ramifications that would be for generations later. We all want to be significant. We all want to do things that make a difference. And these five women show us how. We all want to be a hero. But you don't have to be famous to be a hero. The Lord told me one time when he was trying to teach me about dying to self. He said about a hero, he said, a hero never becomes a hero because they were out to save themselves. They don't make monuments for people that had the story of, hey, I got out of that situation all by myself. They do monuments for people that save others. And that's where we can be. So as we make a difference and change people's lives, the four things that these women teach us, these five women, is number one, we can live in the fear of God. We can live in the fear of God, and I'm telling you, it makes an impact. Those two women made an impact on the entire Hebrew nation and the culture of Egypt because they had the fear of God. Everybody has that. They lived by faith. They lived by faith, and we can live by faith and push through the difficult times. We take that faith and we stretch forth and we find the strategy and then we step into action. We can live by compassion. Compassion to care about other people, to take the time to care about other people and to be their hero. We can also live by serving and to make other people's lives meaningful. There is no special talent or gift needed. no special talent or gift. So we may not have our name in lights. We may not have our name mentioned. We may not get a thank you. Maybe on Mother's Day, you may not even get a call or a visit you wanted. But you can still be a hero. I'm going to finish with a quote from Mother Teresa. It says, "Not all of us can do great things, but we can all do small things with great love." And that's what we can do. All right.